background talking there.
Yeah, so we're having some issues with the audio. Getting Bob to come in and help with that.
Okay.
We'll do what best we can.
Okay. All right, so let's move on to item A1, which is the approval of the consent calendar. Did anyone have any changes or questions on the approval of the minutes?
I guess not a change to the minutes. I think the minutes are correct. We made had a motion approved by this committee to go ahead and add additional milestones on the Microsoft Project Management schedule. Unfortunately, when it was discussed by City Council, Marlis presented our motion as to change the report, which was not our motion, but the city approved the motion. So just a frustration, but it just happened. That's the way it goes, I guess.
Okay, so no changes to the minutes, though. Anybody else on the minutes? Okay, I did have one question, and it was on that same item, item B1 on the minutes, the recording of the vote. Typically, when there's a vote that's not unanimous, what I've seen is, say, ayes and then the names and then noes and then the names and then abstain and absent. But this one doesn't follow that kind of format. Is this typical for the way it's done for the city council votes when there's a split vote?
I believe that's
our regular format, and that's how the city council is done. I'll confirm that while we're talking. Typically take minutes, but I think that is the right format. Or the typical format that we use. I've also seen it done your ways and the way you mentioned in other cities. But I think this is how Morro Bay's typically done it.
Okay. I just thought it was kind of odd that the names of those voting aye were not recorded.
Yeah, I'll confirm that. And if it needs to be corrected to be standard, we can bring them back and do that.
Okay. All right. So with that, do I have a motion to approve the minutes as presented?
Yeah, I also move that we approve the minutes as written.
Okay. How about a second?
Second.
Is that Homer?
Yes.
Okay. All those in favor?
Aye.
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 Aye. Any opposed? Okay, thank you. So now we'll go on to item B1, which is a brief finance director update. Jennifer, take it away, please.
Okay, and just as a follow-up, I did look, at least in one council packet, that is how it's recorded in those minutes as well. So I think that's the standard in Morro Bay. But as an update, there's, a lot going on, as COVID continues to linger and is, expected to stay around for at least the, indefinite future. We don't see an end date at this point. So, as you all know, we incurred some pretty significant budget reductions for the last quarter of 1920 and, of course, the current adopted budget for 2020-21. With that, it included the loss of vacant positions and layoffs. So we've had the layoff notification period has ended, and we've had staff transition and leave and move to different departments as a result of that. So your finance department looks a little different now. When we do open the doors, you'll see some different faces here. If any of you are familiar with Charlie from Recreation, she used to work over in Recreation down in Harbor before that. She's returning to finance. That's where she started her career out with Morro Bay. So she has familiarity with our, I think she was an account clerk doing utility billing when she started. So she's back with us here in finance. We're happy to have her back. She brings a lot of energy here to the department, so we're happy to have her. And Cherie, who was our utility clerk, is no longer with us. And we do have Carly on board as well, at least part-time, to help with the transition and see how the revenues continue to come in. But just wanted to let you know there's some new faces here. In case you call for questions or we do open the buildings at some point, you'll be aware of that. We are in process of our audit. This past week, we had the interim audit. The auditors were not able to come on site as they typically do. So they provided us with their samples. We pulled everything, scanned it to them, and have been uploading all of their requests into their essentially Dropbox feature. So we are starting some of the year-end audit entries that we can, such as payroll accruals, this last payroll. Still have some revenues to come in. We monitor every week to see where we're at. So we're still anticipating at this point we're going to close the year somewhere between $1 million and $1.2 million in the red because of the last quarter of COVID. Our March TOT was a little bit better than I thought. April was a little bit worse. And then May, which we were kind of holding out to see because it seemed like we were quite busy in May, was about a third of what we received in the prior year. So we've definitely experienced impacts from this and waiting to see how long that lasts. There are a lot of people in town. I think hotel rates are back up to where they used to be. They were half, so even if hotels were full at half the rate, you're getting half the TOT. So we watch it constantly, monitoring constantly. We'll have our June results in early August, and that will be quite telling for us. An additional note, our original sales tax projections, we used a blended method between our sales tax consultant, HDL, and some historical data from what the city had received during the recessionary period in 2008. I blended those two together to come up with our budget numbers. Happy I did, because our sales tax consultants' estimates were based on a reopening in mid-May. And we know that we've reopened, we've closed, and we don't know the duration of this. So we'll be watching that closely in the coming months as well. Our budget for this year, 2021, we did receive notice of getting some CARES money, about $100,000, I think it was $106,000. So we've submitted the documentation for that, and we're reviewing the program to see what is able to be funded with that. It's not general fund money available for the general fund. It's to offset COVID costs. So it's not a windfall of any chance, but it certainly will help us recover some of the expenses we've had. To Mr. Beckman's point on the face masks, we are seeing increased compliance. It continues to be something we are striving to do better on and get more compliance on. We are going to be launching a new face mask campaign or face covering campaign this week that we hope will be helpful, and all the employees and the police and public safety is on board to help with that. So I'm going to approach it from a more positive perspective and encouraging people to do that out of respect for everybody else and the safety of our community. So hopefully that will be helpful, and we'll see continued continued usage and wearing of face coverings. Other than that, our budget was adopted at the last or at the end of June at the council meeting. And at this last council meeting, the council did approve putting a sales tax measure on the ballot, a 1% measure. And that vote was really an approval to give the community the chance to vote on that. So that went through, and we're working on the process to get the ballot language ready for the county and for the upcoming November ballot. So any questions on any of that? I'm happy to answer that.
Just jump right in if anybody has any questions.
Thanks, Jennifer. It's a good summary. And if we watched some of this city council meeting, I'm sure we saw some of that information as well. So great job. Appreciate it.
Thank you.
Thank you, Jennifer. Thank you, Barbara. So we'll move on to item B2, which is the review of the quarterly WRF update report. And also we're going to be talking about CFAC's role and reviewing this as came from the city council back in January, I guess it was. We have some new items that we're supposed to be looking at as the project gets going and the money starts coming in, going out and coming in. So with that introduction, I'll hand it back over to Jennifer.
Sure. I'm going to do real brief here, and then Eric Saris is online. He'll give a presentation. Joe Miller is online as well, as is Rob Leibig. So we'll all be available to answer any questions you have. There were a large number of questions submitted in advance. I think we got answers to all of them. I don't think any of them got dropped off. So if we did miss anything, please let us know. One question that was on there was on single audit. For those of you that aren't aware, we receive money in excess of $750,000 in a single year. It triggers a special audit called a single audit. Now that we are receiving reimbursements, and we received that prior to the close of 2020 from WIFIA, we are required to have a single audit. Our auditors are on board. They complete it as they do our regular one and just do additional testing for those reimbursements. There was a question on the cost for that. We had asked the auditors for a cost estimate for us to plan. They provided me with an estimate this afternoon. Originally, or typically, it's $3,800, but they're going to only charge us $3,500. So a little bit of a discount there, which I would just add as a side note, several of our consultants have offered up similar discounts in light of the situation we're in, so we're very appreciative of that. This is a requirement. We don't have any choice to do this, so it's not a discretionary spend. It's something we have to do in order to continue to receive the WIFIA and SRF money. So we'll be doing that for the next several years, as or at least next year, as we have those funds come in. And with that, I'll let Eric lead off with his presentation.
Eric, before you go, Jennifer, that money, that $3,500, can be covered with the proceeds from the loans, or is that not a project cost?
I don't think that they will be reimbursable under WIFIA. Perhaps under SRF they will, but I kind of doubt it. Until we get more information on SRF, I don't think they'll qualify under WIFIA from my recollection.
Okay. All right. Eric, on your presentation, considering that we've all seen it and that we've got a lot of questions into you, can you give us a very brief presentation and perhaps cover those couple items that Homer requested?
Great. Yeah, I John, I'm not sure which questions were Homer's, but if you guys just refresh my memory on that, that would be great. Progress on the construction, was that your questions, Homer? Perfect. Okay, good. So, Mr. Chair, Madam Vice Chair, members of CFAC, Eric Caceres with the city's WRF program manager. Good to talk to you guys. I have prepared a presentation. It's kind of our typical quarterly report presentation, but I do start it with kind of a general update and review of the construction progress to date. So I'm going to go ahead and share my screen here. There we go. Great. Sorry, guys, 1 second. There we go. So recommendation for this report is that you receive the quarterly update report. As I mentioned previously, and as requested by Mr. Chair, we'll do a general project status. So as most of you probably know, we have started construction out on the WRF site. Actually, that's where I am out here today. Just a little bit of a timeline. We issued a construction notice to proceed on March 20th of this year. The contractor got started immediately with installation of VMPs for things like stormwater, as well as meeting a number of the mitigations that we have for environmental, really at the end of March and into the beginning of April. So jumped on that right away. A number of those mitigations needed to be in place before we could really do any work. Things that fall into that category are really the wildlife exclusion fencing that's required by the biological opinion and a couple of other things. Really, April, the contractor began mobilizing and setting up the laydown area and the trailer area where we're sitting here now. Earthwork started in April in earnest. And then we've made a number of references to this in the past, but we did have a soil slip back on May 5th, 2020. Hesitate to call it a landslide. It's a little dramatic, but we did have a soil instability issue. And then as we also had mentioned in previous meetings, some of the earthwork was being held up by the need to get a streambed alteration agreement from the California Department of Fish and Wildlife. And I'm happy to report that we did receive that agreement on the draft agreement on July 13th, and it was finalized the following day. And now we are moving forward kind of uninhibited on the site. And in July, we have already started some of the underground piping as well as some of the concrete work, and we'll get into that here in a second. I did want to just remind everybody, because it's something that really dominated the beginning of construction and continues to be extremely important as we move forward, is we've got a number of mitigation measures that we need to comply with. We have our environmental document that has a number of mitigations that are required. That was back in 2018 when that was finalized. We have a coastal development permit that we received last year that has a number of different requirements in it that we've got to comply with. We negotiated a programmatic agreement with the State Historic Preservation Office through the consultation with them that's required because our project is receiving federal funding. Again, a number of mitigations that are included in there. As I mentioned, we also worked with the U.S. Fish and Wildlife on a biological opinion for the California red-legged frog. Again, a number of additional avoidance measures on top of what's already included in our environmental document. We have a permit for naturally occurring asbestos on the site, so we've got specific requirements that we need to meet in terms of dust control and other requirements. We have our stormwater pollution prevention plan that we have to abide by during construction to minimize any water quality impacts that could result from rain on the site and runoff. And then finally, we received a streambed alteration agreement from California Department of Fish and Wildlife just last week for the erosional feature that runs across our site. So in everything that we do, it is very much colored by all of these different documents, kind of a master sheet tracking all of these things and our compliance with all of these, and we've got well over 100 different mitigations that we're following just for the water reclamation facility construction itself. So I just wanted to highlight that as we talk a little bit about what's been going on the site. I think the soil slip is one to start with. We could talk a little bit about that. Essentially, what we have here is we had a small landslide that occurred back in early May. You see it, the 6-foot dimension there, that's a person, but we had about a 10-foot deep fissure, about 18 inches wide, for a pretty good size chunk of earth that started to slide there on that hillside. And it's something Eric, that we continue to deal with.
Eric, hey, Eric.
All I can Eric, see is just...
Yeah, we're not seeing any of your slides.
Oh, really?
Yeah.
Okay. Hold on here, guys. Sorry.
Advances when it gets up.
I'm just sharing the wrong screen. Hold on. Is that working? Still nothing? Okay. Let me minimize that real quickly. So I apologize for that. I will, so this is the timeline that I was going through. Again, a number of these environmental requirements and mitigations that we need to abide by. And then this is the soil slip, the figure of the soil slip here. Minimize this as much as possible. Showing the dimensions, ended up being about 15,000 cubic yards of material that needed to be moved that we hadn't anticipated moving due to this particular issue. Here is the site as it currently sits as of yesterday, actually. So I want to draw your attention to kind of three things over there to the left-hand side of the screen. That's the laydown area where the contractor's trailers sit and the program manager's trailers sit. And we stockpile material, kind of the area that's closest to Casa Flores and to Teresa Road there. Up in the top right area, we have that erosional feature that we have been talking a lot about. And we started work on that erosional feature the day that we received the final stream bed alteration agreement. So already making a lot of progress in that area. Eventually that whole area in there will essentially become the fill area for the project. So all their excavation that we're doing around the site, that excess material is going to go into that erosional feature. And then down towards the bottom of the screen, we have our water bearing structures. So just a couple other shots will show the specifics. So this is looking up the erosional feature, or as we call it, the canyon. Again, this area, we're installing an underdrain system to carry or to manage the storm water that falls on this area. But essentially, this area is all going to be filled in. It's really our stockpile area, so we're not spending money hauling and disposing of dirt off-site. And then we have started rebar and forming work. We actually just started laying the bottom out of rebar yesterday for the VNR basins, really the workhorse in the treatment system. And just to the left of that are the sludge holding tanks. These are the two deeper water-bearing structures that we have for the project. So work on those is progressing while the contractor is focusing on moving material into that erosional feature area. They're also working on and will begin pouring concrete next week for in those basins. One of the questions that was asked had to do with any local participation from subcontractors, and I am happy to report, this is a good segue, the design build team has brought on a subcontractor, Williams, who is a concrete subcontractor. I think they just fall outside of the city's local ordinance definition of local because they are in Los Osos. But they will be performing this initial concrete work with the hopes that can be expanded to encompass all the concrete work on the site, something to the tune of probably about $4 million ultimately if they end up doing all the work. So that's a good story there in terms of some good local participation by a local contractor. And then I have some slides here on the quarterly report itself, and I'll go through these as quickly as I can per the chair's request. Again, this is to Mr. Bowe's comments earlier. We do bring a single report to CPAC and City Council each month. It goes to City Council on the consent agenda. Every third month it comes to CPAC and City Council for a presentation and an in-depth review. And we do a budget reconciliation every quarter. And then annually, we re-baseline the budget and schedule. And to Mr. Bowe's point, we do have, especially now that we're under construction and we're reviewing pretty large and very extensive payment applications from the contractor, it's becoming very difficult to be able to meet the schedule for the quarter. And so we really only have a couple of weeks between the close of the quarter and when we need to turn around the quarterly report. So something we definitely want to continue to talk to both CFAC and City Council about is that delaying the quarterly and monthly reports by an additional month. For example, we scrambled to get this one put together. But you know, we didn't receive the actual payment application from the contractor, which was a pretty sizable payment application until Monday of last week, which was the 14th or 15th. So it's something that we definitely want to talk about. And it's not uncommon for other projects like this, because it does take quite a bit of time and effort to kind of close out the quarter. In terms of some of the highlights on project status, so we did rebaseline the budget at $130.6 million. And that's essentially in line with our Q3 budget reconciliation that we did back in March of this year, just a few tens of thousands of dollars higher. In terms of the schedule rebaselining, did want to mention the key date that we focus on is the water reclamation facility substantial completion, which is essentially when the city will comply with the time schedule order. The regional board is requiring the city to have the plant up and running by February 28th of 2023. Our current schedule has us reaching substantial completion on September 2nd of 2022. So we've got about a 6-month float between the TSO compliance deadline and our current projection for substantial completion. And just to bring your attention to a couple of other dates, the previous substantial completion date that we had in our previous quarterly report was June 15th. The reason for that shift out to September 2nd really has to do with the stream bed alteration agreement issue and the additional time that that we are working to negotiate with the design build team on that. And just to give some other historical perspective, the original baseline substantial completion for the project was November 11th, 2021. So about a year prior to our projected September 2nd deadline, and we can go into those details of that if anyone has questions. Again, this is a summary of the progression of the quarterly budget reconciliations and the annual rebaselining. As you can see, and as mentioned previously, the Q4 and annual and the Q3 quarterly reconciliation are very close in terms of the budget. Some things to note about the budget in terms of some of the changes that you'll see from the previous quarter. When we presented the previous quarter, it was a little bit difficult because we had a number of potential change orders that were currently being negotiated with the design build team. So at that point in time, we had recommended shifting or requesting an additional amount of money be put into contingency that we could then pull out of contingency and give to the water reclamation facility to cover those potential change orders. So as you see in that previous table, you'll see a large shift out of contingency and into the water reclamation facility budget. Minimal changes on the conveyance facilities, no changes on the recycled water facilities. A general project, a couple of items increased slightly, some of the construction management projections, and I emphasize projections through the end of the project have gone up just a little bit. We haven't started that work yet. We will here in a couple months, and we'll see how those start to actualize. Additional permitting support, we've been spending a lot of time and effort in not only the potable reuse permitting, but all the work with CDFW and others. And then there was a slight increase in some of the property acquisition costs, and we can get into a little bit of that, but that has to do with the Shepherd property, essentially where the construction trailers are sitting and where our access road goes through. There were some provisions of that purchase agreement that resulted in a little bit higher property acquisition cost for the project. I'll skip over this. We did not do another rates analysis this quarter, one because we were stressed for time. The other is because the change was very slight compared to the previous quarter. So this was presented back at the previous quarterly report, and is a comparison of the annual debt service payments and the total debt service throughout the duration of the time from 2018 till current day. Some of the key accomplishments and challenges, again, you'll be able to see this in the quarterly report. Our dashboard, which since we're rebaselining, most of these things show no change between current and the baseline. And then the other thing is the cash flow. This is one of the things that you will notice a change because we are rebaselining essentially the red line that's usually on our figure and the blue line are now one and the same. And we will monitor the blue line and the red line as we move forward through this upcoming fiscal year. So if we start spending, as we start spending differently compared to what is currently budgeted, you will see that red line and blue line separate there in subsequent reports. That shows the total expenditure to date for the project is just shy of $24 million. The schedule, again, rebaseline, showing that that the project is all on schedule based on the rebaseline budget, which shouldn't come as a surprise. I did want to highlight there's the milestone schedule is in the report, and so all of these dates can be seen in the report. I won't go over those in detail, but I did want to mention a couple of things on the schedule adjustment. We've been dealing with the recycled water facilities and the impacts to the schedule that have been presented by the Vista property access that we had trouble with last year, as well as and that delayed the hydrogeo work. So in our schedule, now that we've rebaselined, it shows the rebaseline and the planned schedule show completion of the injection wells out into 2023. And I just wanted to make sure. Now we show bars going out past our TSO compliance date, and just wanted to reiterate that the TSO compliance date is tied to the ability for the city to meet secondary treatment and discharge that water to the ocean, and does not tie the city to have to inject that water before that February 28th, 2023 deadline. And that is my truncated presentation.
Okay, Eric, thank you. Before we move to the questions from our committee members, can you answer the question that Dan had regards to the $300,000?
Yeah, so we are still dealing with the soil slip issue in terms of we are waiting on the design build team to provide two pieces of information. One of those is what was the total cost impact? And we know based on our experience out here in the field that the actual construction activity was about $300,000 in cost impact. We are estimating that the additional redesign and the additional work by the geotechnical engineer is about another $200,000 potentially. And so the total cost impact is $500,000. So that's one thing to set aside here. The other thing is the merit. And essentially the merit, the DB team will be approaching us with a potential change order to cover this issue. And I think as we've discussed in this forum or at City Council previously, there is a disagreement obviously between who we believe should be paying for this, if it should be covered under the existing GMP. And as I mentioned, we are waiting on the final rationale from the DB team as to why this should be a potential change order. So that's where we are there. We haven't, we haven't proposed taking a potential change order to PWAB or council. It's going to be something that we're going to be actively negotiating with the design build team. But again, our position is that this is not something that warrants a change.
Is that include stream bed alteration as well, Eric?
No, the stream bed alteration agreement, I will say, is a very different issue. That stream bed alteration agreement is definitely something that that the design build team is not responsible for. So any delays in costs or additional costs incurred from the lack of the stream bed alteration agreement is going to result in a change order.
So that's in addition to the $500,000 that you mentioned?
That's correct.
And how about the whole COVID-19, the delays that are being impacted because of the environment we're in right now? Is that another potential change order?
It's something that, back in March when all of this was starting to happen, We did get a letter from the design build team per our agreement that reserved their ability to file a claim at some point in the future. The DB team has been noting some time in their payment applications that has been coded to COVID-19. It hasn't been a large amount, but we do not have a negotiated change order at this time for impacts of COVID-19. I will say that unlike a lot of construction projects, where we are in the construction is good. Considering the situation, we don't have people really congregating together in a trench, in a pipe gallery, in an electrical building. They're all in their individual pieces of earth moving equipment. So not a lot of impacts.
Thank you, Eric. Okay, as far as other questions, we're going to move forward, assuming that everyone went through all of the questions and answers that were submitted by committee members and then responded to by both Eric and Jennifer. So hopefully we won't be having to repeat things that were already answered. But if there are things that you didn't get an adequate answer for or for the additional information you need, this would be the time. I would like to mention one thing, Eric, to you, and that is the form that we received the answers on, that is meant to be printed on 11 by 17 paper. And when I print it on my little 8.5 by 11 paper, it's really hard for me to read. So I'm not sure how you can format that in the future, but if you could do it in a different way, it would be helpful for me at least.
Sure. Yeah, that could definitely be done. That's a good point. I was trying to minimize the number of pages, I guess.
Sure. I appreciate that. So this time let's do it in this order. Let's go alphabetically by first name. So Barbara would be the first to ask questions. Barbara? Do you have any questions?
Sorry, I was just unmuting. No, I want to thank Eric. I think it was very thorough. I agree with you. If you can maybe use some real narrow margins and make the table, the height of each little table with an answer a little taller. Of course, take more pages, but you can probably print it front and back, but that would be very helpful. No, it was a little hard to follow it, but that's not anything Eric or anybody else can do. It's because we are all submitting so many different questions. I think a lot of the questions were, bringing up confusion about the requests that CFAC has made, because every request CFAC has made, then someone else had a question, why are you doing this table that way? And some of the questions, I think, were already addressed either at a city council meeting, or even some of them were from WRFCAC a couple years ago. So it was probably a little more detail than I wanted to see, but excellent job in responding in such a short period of time. My question would be, how much did it cost to answer all these questions in terms of either labor hours or whatever else? Was that done by Corolla or city staff, or probably a combo of both?
That was mostly me, a little bit of city staff. So it's probably 6 to 8 hours of my time. I think we got probably a good 40 questions or so.
Okay. Thank you.
Thank you, Barbara. So now we'll go to Bart.
Okay. Thank you. I have a little bit of a different take than Barbara does. The first comment has to do with the timing. We basically took direction from the council, and I thought Corolla, as far as when they would have quarterly reports. We did not dictate when they ought to be. We just were told this is when they would be. So I didn't follow the logic. But if Eric wants to change when the quarter is, that's fine. We just then would adjust our meetings to make sure we meet that schedule. But so if he wants the council to change when the quarters are, we don't have any problem. We did not direct that. Then my other comments, I'm not looking for any answers. These are just, I want to offer my observations on the cash flow. First of all, thank you Jen and Eric for including this information. I think it's very valuable. To note that we've received $1.4 million in disbursements out of over $23 million recorded. Our expenditures going forward are $3 to $4 million a month, starting next month. This performance was described as working out very well. That is not how I would have characterized that issue. Relative to the budget, a normal or best practice at Project Controls is to explain differences between major budget forecast projections. In other words, we had a budget last year, and then that was adjusted, which always happens, but you typically explain those. Let me give an example. Land acquisition. The previous budget was $430,000. That went to almost $1.3 million, or a $900,000 increase. There was never an explanation that I'm aware of, unless it was in some council meeting, but not in any document that I've seen. So I don't know what, I still do not know what that is. That was one of my questions, and the response I got, well, that number is now 1.5 million, but yet I didn't see that increase in the quarter report and explained, and I then would have assumed there would have been a drawdown on contingency relative to that issue if it's now gone up even higher than before. On the quarterly report, this is where I take exception to Barbara, because I think we can greatly simplify the time it takes to make that report. There now are six different tables with a total cost in them. There are nine separate tables with a WRF total. To me, this could be greatly simplified with table three as a summary and then supporting tables for the WRF, conveyance, injection, and contracts. So it would be, to me, it would make life a lot simpler. Eric has to make sure that every one of those six tables for the total and every one of the nine tables for the WRF gets changed every time he changes any number. That takes time. Schedule. The answer to my question about consistency between the integrated schedule and quarterly report suggested they are consistent. I will have to go back and review that response because I don't believe I saw that before, but I will go through the lines and look at that. This schedule should contain any Corollo deliverables negotiated in the recent contract. I will look, and hopefully those will all be there too. And it's definitely not clear to me why the Vistra and PG&E issues are not on the schedule, since they have been a concern for over a year. In other words, if you look at the schedule today, it's not even there. But yet that is, I think, a critical path. Those are critical path items. I think one of the answers was we hope to get the PG&E settled soon, but it didn't say anything about Vistra. Hopefully we will agree to form a subcommittee to fully vet my concerns and the responses received. If we choose not to go in that direction, I will provide my quote-unquote rebuttals directly to the city. But again, those comments, I'm not looking for any response. Thank you.
Thank you, Bart. So now we'll go to Bill.
I thought you were going to use William. I was sitting here relaxing and being the last person on. But as we all know, on 8 January of 2019, the City Council gave the CFAC the responsibility to include reviewing the financial aspects of the program. We're all finance people. We know what financial aspects are. They're obviously budgeting, accounting, financial reporting, internal controls, auditing, procurements, disbursements, etc. It's not just the WRF report, as was reinforced when we had a Zoom meeting in April with the mayor on four additional responsibilities. So our responsibility goes beyond just look at this report. My understanding, though, is that this report is a main function of the CFAC to review it for accuracy, completeness. And so it's by the time it goes to the City Council, they're getting a report that is accurate and complete and not full of errors or inconsistencies or obfuscations. I submitted two pages of questions, 23 questions. I'll not go through those. Eric did a great job of answering most of mine. We're focusing on the WRF. with Joe, although many, I would have many good those because I don't agree with the answers. The answers are very politically written in a way to make it look like things aren't going badly at all. The report currently does not give an accurate representation of where the program stands. I'll just give, Bart mentioned the numerous tables that are duplicative, and often there are inconsistencies because it's tough to get all the numbers straight. You know, and so a lot of our comments are, well, this number is not the same as that number. It could be a lot simpler. And for whatever reason, the city council likes this report. A good example, table 4, the stoplight chart. When I saw that in the beginning, I said, this is perfect. That's all you need to look at. Stoplight chart, see red, green, yellow. And however, you know, what it does, which I only now recently realized, it compares this quarter's performance with last quarter. Just think, you know, if it's over 5%, it's yellow. But if it's under 5% growth in the last 3 months, it's yellow. In 3 years, if you had 4% growth every quarter, you'd be green, green, green all the way along. You'd have a 60% growth. Not a good way to report, but leave that to the audience who's listening. This, I missed it, but I didn't realize until today when I was looking at the comments that Eric provided on my questions, that the table 4 compares Q4 1920 with Q4 1920. Surprise, it's green. You know, and there are other tables in the report with no data, all green bullets. Oh, what is the objective of the report? I thought it's to give a status in an efficient form to how is the program doing. A lot of good material there, but a lot of things makes it come across sort of poor. The other aspect, even if it had compared this report, compared last quarter with this quarter, the WRF cost has increased 8%. It wouldn't be green, you know. So even following the model that they've used all along would have been better than what we have in this report, where probably a key report or page out of the report is the stoplight chart. That's where most people want to get a quick understanding of where a product program is. If we had a WRF subcommittee, a lot of these questions and discussions could have occurred prior to the meeting. We would have had an opportunity, which we can't now because the whole committee needs to get together to see anything. So the report that would be distributed to CFAC would be pretty much error-free, no other comments on it that we would have. Unfortunately, I went back over the last couple of quarters, or in fact 3 quarters, and looked many of the changes that we recommend, and Eric says, yes, we'll do this, we'll make the change. They never get made. The city council sees exactly what we see. And I can see it's a cost savings. So we have a process now where we get a report, a lot of obfuscations, a lot of inconsistencies, multiple errors, and they don't get corrected and they just go to city council. And city council, probably some of them are listening to this report or this meeting. We'll hear where some of the errors are. None of them are very big, but they just are not right. Certainly the table 4 stoplight chart is just wrong and needs to be changed. Table 3 is such a good report because everything is listed there. But then a lot of the answers I got from Eric said, well, you agreed. The CFAC told us to create this table, which is true. But then things are in the last thing, other contracts that are not very well understood. So that's enough of my comments. Thank you.
Hey, thank you, Bill. Homer, you are up next.
Eric? I thought that the update at the beginning of the presentation was terrific, and especially the pictures of what's going on at the site. I don't think that people are really very aware of the activity that's taking place. And I hope you'll continue to include pictures like that and the verbal updates of what your plans are for the next 3 months, etc., because I think that's really informative for the community to see. Your comment about the local, my definition of local is a little more expanded than the city council's. I include the county and northern Santa Barbara County, since I believe that there's a lot of commerce throughout that area. But you mentioned, you know, Los Osos, like it's close. Well, Steve Williams poured the concrete for my next door neighbor's driveway a year ago and just finished pouring the foundation for another good friend's house in the Harbor Tract. I also know that the fellow that lives up the street from me was the one that got the subcontracting job for the concrete pumping. I'm hoping that you continue to, in your presentation, bring forward the fact that there is a lot of this, of our money, being recirculated in San Luis Obispo County. And the city's going to benefit from that. I mean, where are all those guys out there eating lunch, for instance? During your pre-bid meeting for the conveyance system, I understand from your response you got six firms that came. Off the top of your head, were any of them local?
Yeah, real quick, Homer, I think the Williams that you're talking about is the brother of, and Rob can probably explain this a little bit better. I think there's a couple of
there's three brothers.
Concrete guys out there. So I think I don't think it's Steve. I think it's one of the other ones.
It's okay.
Okay. So good question. Yes, we had a pre-bid meeting, a mandatory pre-bid meeting on July 7th. We had six general contractors, and one of them is from San Luis Obispo.
Terrific.
One of them is from Santa Barbara. One of them is from the Central Valley, and several of them were from Southern California. And I think we may have one from Northern California.
Well, let's hope when the San Luis Obispo County guy sharpens his pencil.
They're city of San Luis Obispo.
And the last thing I want to mention is your discussion about the timing of submitting these quarterly reports. And I follow along with Bart's comments, with one exception. And that's a September report that's coming up. If we don't see that until the third week in November, the city council probably won't see it until January. And that's because traditionally the Morro Bay City Council cancels their second meeting in November. Mm-hmm. Because this is an election year, the first meeting in December is usually a puff meeting where their speech is made and they swear in the new council members. But keep in mind, we're going to be sitting a new council during that second meeting, the second week in December. So that meeting traditionally has always been pretty whiffy. So the real first, traditionally, the first meeting won't be until January. Yeah. They could change all that and have special meetings, of course. But my suggestion would be if you're going to change this process, you wait until the fourth quarter report versus the third quarter report.
Yeah, that's a good point. And I think obviously the report that we just delivered is the one that takes the most time and effort out of all of them in the throughout the year, because this is the one that sets, you know, the baseline for the upcoming year. You know, I think we can figure out a way to make it work and to deliver the September report in October. Like I said, it's just a little bit tight. Like I said, because CFAC meets the third week, we've got to have it in by the second week. And we're typically not getting, you know, we typically start getting invoices the first week, and definitely for the design build contractor and for the conveyance facilities contractor and the contractor for the injection wells. Those payment applications for construction are, one, they take more time for the contractor to prepare and more time for us to review. But, it sounds like the Q3 report, or excuse me, the Q1 report, may be a special situation.
John, that's all I have.
Okay, thank you, Homer. Lois, you are up next.
Thank you. First, I want to express my appreciation to Eric for turning this around so quickly. I think overall there were some reasonable questions among those that were submitted in advance for him to address, and I want to express my appreciation to the committee for that. On another note, I would challenge my fellow committee members with respect to refraining from continuing to ask for changes to the layout of the report. It's already been vetted, and we seem to keep asking for things to be changed. It's causing confusion. It costs $300 an hour for Eric to go through these questions. So let's say this costs $2,000 for him to respond. And finally, I would also ask that you really ask yourself before you ask this question if it's being asked with the intent to understand, because the tone of some of the questions, personally, I found to be maybe not done in that vein. So that's just something I would ask of each of us, to ask questions to seek to understand, as opposed to being critical or inflammatory in some cases. And those are the only comments I have.
Thank you, Lois. Appreciate that. Okay, so Tina, you are next up.
Yep, thank you. There were many questions submitted. I saw them all, and I had a few for myself, but nothing at this time. Thank you, and thanks to everyone.
Thank you, Tina. I think you answered most all the questions I had. I just really one question, Eric, in regards to, well, actually two questions in regards to the schedule. So basically you're saying that we have 180 days buffer to get this project done. At some point, would you possibly be approaching the Regional Water Quality Control Board to extend the deadline? Or is that 6 months something that you consider to be adequate at this point?
I would consider that to be adequate at this point. I don't see any reason why we would need to approach the Regional Board to extend that. I would like to, I guess I'll reserve, you know, final answer to that until we open the bids and award a project for the pipelines, because those two components of the project are intimately tied together. At this point in time, we're happy with the schedule for the pipeline. We are on schedule for awarding that project. Plan to award it the fourth week of September, September 21st. So if we award it on time, then we should have no problem meeting that schedule for substantial completion in September.
Okay, thank you. And in regards to the recycled water, the schedule shows that it looks like for 2023, the first year of operation, there won't be any water being recycled because the facilities won't be built until the end of 2023. Is that right?
Currently, the schedule shows the injection wells being completed right around the end of the fiscal year 2023. So it's like June, July of 2023. We will be bringing the next phase of work for the hydro geo consultant GSI to likely PWAB and then City Council for review and approval. The baseline schedule that has been discussed, the re-baseline detailed schedule, we're currently finalizing that. Those are some outstanding items with GSI that we're working out. Shows all the dates for that. And if we can get them under contract here quickly and get them moving, and especially if we can quickly resolve the property access issues with Vistra and get that property where we can take possession, we should be able to pull up that portion of the project pretty significantly. But that's where we're sitting right now. I think it's a conservative approach to have those scheduled out into 2023 with the hopes of pulling it up in the next couple of months.
Okay, thank you. And I apologize for not limiting my questions to financial issues, but I just had a curiosity about those two things.
No problem.
Okay, thank you. I guess if we don't have any objections, then the committee is deemed to have received and filed this report, unless I hear any objections.
I would hope that the changes that were recommended and agreed to by Eric would be made before the report gets sent to City Council this time. He has more time. Maybe it's not necessary, but it would just, I guess I come from a background of accuracy. I believe that is necessary in a financial world, unless people feel otherwise.
Okay. Thank you, Bill.
John, one comment on your last comment. I think your schedule question was absolutely spot on. The schedule issue is key to costs. So that absolutely, you cannot separate the two. So I think that absolutely is key. And I think going from 18 months of roughly 18 months of float to 6 months of float and being concerned about where that's going when we've just started is a very, very legitimate concern. As well as the cost, as the schedule goes out, that means all the project management costs continue to go out. There's a cost associated with that. So I think it was an excellent question.
Okay. Thank you, Bart. So new this month is some additional information that Jennifer has provided for us in regards to the loans and the reimbursement requests and such. Do any of you have any specific questions about those items that Jennifer would more properly answer rather than Eric? So let's see. Let's go in reverse order on this one. Let's go with Tina first.
Thanks, John. No, thank you. I asked my question, it was answered.
Okay. Lois, do you have any questions on the financial issues with the loans?
No, I just really want to express my appreciation to Jennifer for providing this in a very simple, easy to understand format. Thank you.
Okay. And Homer?
No, my questions were already answered.
Okay. Bill, anything on those reimbursement requests?
Yes, just I see that 60% of the reimbursement or requests for reimbursement are for water, and then 40% for wastewater. Could you explain that difference and how is that calculated? How do you determine that? And is that mandatory?
It is, yes. So it is part of our agreement with Lithia. When we did the back to the day with the city managers, Blue Ribbon, Forrest, Homer, and Barbara on that, the decision was made that it made sense because of the nature of the project to fund this project out of water and sewer. And we came up with an allocation of how much water, how much sewer. As we worked through the WIFIA loan process, we were cognizant of the fact that we'd be or expecting SRF funding as well. And so the percentage in WIFIA was developed so that we could fund SRF fully with the sewer fund. So we tried to allocate it out to make it an easier process on one end, and we thought that the state would appreciate that, and WIFIA was very accommodating to whatever split we needed to do that.
So then the invoices that we submit do not need to be directly related to work that's related to water and work that's related to the wastewater. Is that correct?
That's correct. They just split whatever invoice we receive, they split it out according to that percentage. With the understanding being that the total project is about 29.71%.
Thank you.
Okay, and Bart, any other questions on the financial?
Yeah, I do. In fact, Bill just brought up one that complicates the question I was going to ask. But first, fantastic job, Jennifer. I really appreciate you including that. And it was done very well, very simply. The question I had, and now it got complicated, was what amount of money do we have available? And apparently, per this discussion, it means there's two amounts of money, one for sewer and one for water, which complicates the whole thing. But what's the approximate, like right now we submitted, we've got 1.4 million back. There was 17 or 18 million at least probably in an account, but we're going to start spending more. How much money is there that we're, that we have to, if you will, play with, roughly?
So what we, what was kind of, what we've changed plans and switched gears on because of the interest rates we received on Lithia and expect to receive for SRF is, if you recall in the original rate study, we were going to use cash on hand. But we are still earning more on an interest in LEAF, with our cash than we're paying on this, loan with Lithia. So in the budget for 2021, we're planning to fully fund the project with loan financing for this year. It helps with the cash flow, but also we just earn more money on interest, so that makes sense. So when you ask how much we have to play with, it's the reimbursements that we're getting, in addition to the cash that we had on hand. I'm going to pull it up for you. I think it's about $10 million or $12 million split between the two. It's probably gone up a little bit adding the reimbursements that we received so far, so maybe $15 million. However, I would also note that the reimbursement requests from Lithia that I noted kind of got held up because of the size and, you know, they didn't receive it and we've done the Dropbox now. They did notify us yesterday that or this morning, they're going to do a manual disbursement. We should have that money by the end of the week. They've been very helpful and accommodating and easy to work with, especially as we work through these first few reimbursements. So that's $3.5 million almost that will add to that, you know, money we have to play with. So we're close to about $15 million. I can pull up the exact split for you, knowing that we have it close.
That's close enough. So in other words, at $3.5 million a month, there should be enough play there to get these starting to come through. And then the SRF is the end of the year. And then hopefully that'll kick in.
Sorry. Correct. And once we get SRF signed, both for the grant and the loan, we'll add that to these charts and we will submit alternatively, I think it's going to be the plan for Lithia and SRF. I expect SRF to take longer to receive those reimbursements. So if we alternate between the two, that I think that'll help keep the cash flow going pretty consistently.
Thank you.
Thank you, Bart and Barbara.
Sure, fine. No specific questions. Thank you, Jennifer. I thought the format of that report was at the right level of detail, summarized very clearly, easy to read and comprehend. And thank you for taking the time to do that.
Thank you, Barbara. Jennifer, so you've submitted three reimbursement requests to Lithia.
Yes.
Okay. And if you submit them by the end of the month, they turn it around by the middle of the next month?
Yes. So that's if we fantastic. Submit, we'll submit by, actually Janine's already coming in to pull the next round to be submitted. So we'll submit by the end of this month and we should have it by August 15th.
So it sounds like they don't have any COVID issues.
They do not. And it, like I mentioned, they're very helpful, very easy to work with. And in fact, the first two reimbursements that you see on the list, we had asked them if we could kind of do a trial reimbursement to make sure we filled everything out right and submitted everything. So those were actually supposed to be kind of trial reimbursements, but everything was okay. And they were like, well, you don't need to do anything different. So we're going to approve these and move forward. So, they've been really easy to work with.
Right. So probably the thing that's going to delay with you the most would be just compiling the invoices on your end and getting them submitted. I mean, so for example, on this third request, how far, what are the invoices for those? What months do those cover? Does that third request cover? Does that take it up through like April or?
Let me pull it up to give you the exact amount. third request, I don't believe is that far back, was what we're doing now and what is helpful and what's different from like the planning loan, for example. We run separate WRF AP batches. So everything we do every 2 weeks is in one batch. Our account clerk, Chloe, here in our office, immediately scans them and drops them into a shared folder that we've now given access to WIFIA, so they can just go in and get them when we say that we're ready and the signed request form is in there. So we're not having to go back, pull records out of storage. You know, the planning loan, for example, went back to 2015. So when I started looking for those, it was really understanding what qualified for that, pulling the files out of storage. In fact, I still have them all here. You know, it's many boxes and going through those. So we've got the process pretty streamlined now. And we're caught up. The next reimbursement request will go for the 2 week period that we haven't submitted for yet. So it's going pretty streamlined and is working well for us for WIFIA. And I expect we'll use the same process for SRF once we see what the requirements are. But I will pull up. I just have to get in our SharePoint here and tell you the time period.
Just notice that the first request, which we have the actual request information for, was for October and November on Corolla, and then for October and December on Felac Overland. So, but that was the first one, and I just didn't have any information on the other two requests, so I just was wondering how current that third one was.
And I can add, in the future reporting, I can add the dates and the periods that they cover, if you're interested in that information. So
that might be good information to have. I'm just mindful of the difficulty you had from time to time of getting Public Works invoices to you at the end of the fiscal year. And hopefully that kind of a thing won't happen during this process, but because the dollar amounts are so large.
Right. I think invoices are definitely moving through quicker. Just the amounts of them, you know, the vendors want need their payments. So we're getting them quicker. They're moving through our process quicker. And as the project continues, I think we've got a better handle on getting those paid. And like I said, scanning them immediately, there's not that gap in trying to go find them. So I'm looking at it's a 320 page document, which is why I got kicked back. But
okay. Okay. Tell me later if you don't have it now.
Okay.
All right. So that your information covers really the last three items on the city council's list of new tasks for us to perform. Except of course we can't do anything in regards to the rates because that information with the SRF loan is not available. So,
I just note that the council has requested the rate review. We will be bringing that back. I think I mentioned August in my response back. It might be December or September, I'm sorry, depending on the scheduling. So August, September, we'll come back with at least a discussion on that. Perhaps we'll know more about the conveyance facilities, but we still need those big pieces of that puzzle filled in before we can make any determination on that.
Okay. So I guess for this go around, then we are done with all that information and what's been provided to us. But we did have one other request from one of our members, and that was Bill Bowes, also known as William Bowes. And he sent a request to Jennifer that the CFAC would consider creating or establishing a subcommittee for reviewing these issues to do with the WRF. So, Bill, I think we've all had a chance to read your request, but would you like to make a few comments to the committee?
Yes, just I think the report, based on how well the CFAC CAFRA subcommittee worked, would make a lot of sense, certainly for the WRF to have a subcommittee to be able to do work outside of this two-hour meeting. I mean, some of you, or maybe one of you, think a lot of the questions were meaningless or useless, but they're valid questions that could easily be answered if we had a subcommittee and an opportunity to work ahead of time as opposed to submitting questions, getting answers, and it'd be so much easier just to have a discussion. It would save time from Eric's standpoint and from Joe and Jen and Rob's standpoint from having to review the answers to those questions. So we'd have a lot fewer questions. I think the report would be a lot cleaner. Many of you like the report. Anyone who likes the report thinks it's fine. I don't mind to be sarcastic, but have you ever really tried to understand what all the costs are? When we got involved, certainly having been a program manager and running many, many programs throughout my career, I'd like to know what all the costs are. And it's very difficult to find all the costs. We have made a good start with Table 3, for example, but then things still get scattered around in ways that obfuscate what the real costs are. You can just trust and say, yeah, it's fine. And you don't really need to have knowledge of what all the costs are. But a subcommittee would be, I think, very helpful. The other thing that happens when a draft is available, instead of giving it to a subcommittee to look at and say, why don't you make these changes, have a discussion, all done, a group of two or three can't get together with Eric or with Joe ahead of time because we're not a designated subcommittee. If there did exist a subcommittee, the subcommittee has the ability to look at things to go ahead and help. And I think it would be an asset to speeding up the process and making the product a lot more credible than the product that comes out now. Certainly when the city, those who listen in on this, can hear some of the things that they may think are criticisms for the report. I think they're just omissions or obfuscations that weren't intended. It just happened because no one is really looking at it with an independent set of eyes, which is subcommittee of the WRF, WRF subcommittee could perform. So any other comments? Rob, Bart and I worked on this paper together, and Bart may want to add something.
Yeah, I don't want to duplicate what Bill said, but I would like to note that the vast majority of the questions that I asked, and I think to some extent Bill asked, we have provided that those issues earlier, like a month ago. So these were not surprise questions. We had to finalize them based on what actually came out. But I point to reiterate what Bill said. I had offered in my questions to say, look, you do not need to answer these in writing if we can meet and talk about them. So I gave that option. I was perfectly fine to not basically be required to ask those questions. And that offer was not taken up. But I do think, unfortunately, we can't go into a lot of detail individually with you because of the time here and the Brown Act restrictions. So unfortunately, we really can't defend ourselves on why the questions were asked. But I really do believe that we could streamline this whole discussion and get a much more productive dialogue going if we could have a subcommittee similar to what John and Lois had done. So thank you.
Thank you, Bart. Any other comments or questions on this? Let's just, whoever wants to chime in, please feel free.
And just one other comment that's listed in the paper, based on the bylaws, the committee does not need to have city council approval. It just needs to understand what the staff workload requirements are. John has talked to Jen on that element, and all it needs is a majority of the CFAC can vote to have a subcommittee.
I have a
right.
Questions, John, when you're ready.
Go ahead, Tina.
Okay. So, hey, I am not opposed to a subcommittee by any means, but help me understand something about the timing for just a minute of events so I can understand the impact. Right now, Eric had mentioned earlier in his presentation that the quarterly reports and the monthly reports, it's an aggressive time schedule to get them at the time we're getting them, and basically would like to push that out a month. And it seems like our committee as a whole did not feel like that was a problem, because we're trying to join their cadence when it comes to the report delivery date. And is everybody in agreement that I understood that conversation correctly? Yes?
I believe so. I mean, I don't think there's much we can do about it if that's what has to be done to accommodate the contractors.
Yeah, it makes sense. I do understand that there could be real issues. And so I'm kind of layering my questions here on purpose, so bear with me. So based upon that, there would be this quote-unquote one-month lag time from when the month ends or when the quarter ends. And in between those periods are city council meetings, in some cases, next meetings. Now, the next one will not be until October. So as a subcommittee, can you maybe explain more about how the process of reviewing the reports would work when CFAC cycle meetings are out of sync with the report cycles? Would you give us a pre-chewed report? I mean, how are you envisioning that? I guess I'm directing that to Bill and to Bart, of course. I mean, I'm just trying to understand how the cycle would work based on when the reports would be available for the subcommittee, and then when the subcommittee would be done, quote unquote, and when CFAC is not meeting every month, when we would be brought in on those reports. You guys follow my question?
Bill?
Yeah. I would assume the subcommittee would meet as required to stay abreast of the program. And when changes happen, when we have our next CFAC meeting, we'd be providing a report to the CFAC. When the quarterly reports, which are the only ones the CFAC reviews as a full committee, we would hopefully our comments would have already been made and would be able to say the report covers it, much like the CAFR happened. We didn't have to go into all the detail that Lois and John resolved working with Jen prior to it.
Yeah, I wasn't here for CAFR, so sorry. I don't have a precedent.
My comment is that a lot of the questions we got are not like we're going to have that many different every month or every quarter.
Right.
Most of these issues are issues that I think we'd sit down and resolve once, like some of the format issues that Eric agreed to. You know, had we been able to sit down, he would have just said, okay, fine. No problem. So it's not, you know, and again, I can't go into all the details to defend the questions that are being questioned here, but if we could sit down, quite frankly, I think once and go through this, I'm not going to beat up the issue on how many tables you want. If we want to have 22 tables that Eric, and we want to pay Eric to reconcile those every month, okay, I'm not going to argue. If so be it, but they need to be the same. The bigger issues, though, are like John's question. It's probably one of the best questions that was asked today, and that's how confident are we that we can, that we're not going to have more of a slip when we've had so much of a slip up till now, and what costs do we have? What are our contingency costs to cover all those? So anyway, I really think that one or two meetings would resolve the vast majority of these questions. We just can't do that right now.
Right.
With the structure, and then these meetings are limited in how much time we can take up.
So basically,
we take too much.
I would like to ask a question here. Perhaps my understanding is not clear, but I was of the impression and understanding that the report format has been discussed since inception, and the council gave clear messaging back to us that it's not going to be changed again. Am I misunderstanding that?
That's fine. That's not my point. If we want to keep the report the way it is with the 22 tables and the nine that have the WRF number, fine.
I'm asking for clarification.
You're right. That's what was agreed to. And if everybody wants to keep it that way with that amount of complexity, That's
it's not I'm, everybody not, on this committee. I believe it's the council that said that it was to that it's satisfactory in its current state. So to have that as a as an objective of the subcommittee, I just want to clarify that to make sure we're all on the same page.
That is not the objective.
Okay.
It's where the information, because you've got so many, the information's inconsistent or the schedule doesn't have things. Not that there's all these tables that people agreed to. That's fine. That we are not here to argue the format of the report, if that's to get to your point. That is not something, I'm not saying, you know, I offered a suggestion. In other words, rather than just complain, I offered a possible suggestion, and it just, the answer could be, nope, don't want it. Okay, fine. But that's not a key component to this discussion.
And then the other question I would be interested in hearing staff's reaction to a request, whether or not they anticipate such a subcommittee would save staff time and save engineering, Eric, from having additional time. I'm interested in that because I'm not sure that it's actually going to save time. I'm afraid it might actually take more time. So I would be interested in hearing from them what they think.
Sure. Happy to interject. Thank you for the really good discussion, as always, with this group. You know, when we look at the city council policy around subcommittees, Bill's correct. It's not a council approval process, but really you want to have stated clear objectives and a timeline. They're not necessarily supposed to be evergreen or long lasting. But of course that could be debated within this group. you know, from my vantage point, CFEC asked really good questions during these meetings. There has been a lot of talk though that has been absorbed the time about the format of the report, and maybe not getting down to those more substantive questions that Bart alluded to, that John Martin had raised. So there is opportunity during these meetings to have those conversations. It's just that it's being used a lot of times to talk about format. So that's how I see this time being best utilized, and those questions can be answered here. We're concerned about an expanding scope of a subcommittee. If it had a very short-term duration, maybe we would be able to support that in terms of staff time, but COVID-19 is really, really taking its toll on our organization. And we are at capacity, and any additional work would have to be really well justified from this committee standpoint. So we are concerned about, and I'm concerned about, using more of our staff time when we are battling timelines left and right to have more work done our way. And we do have a WRF subcommittee of the council who's engaged at this, you know, at a high level. So we already are providing kind of that service, if you will. But I totally understand that where the questions are coming from and appreciate the conversation being had today. Thank you.
May I just add something to Scott's comments? I don't think staff time, other than the work that we've been doing, discussing a schedule with Joe and getting copies of the schedule on a periodic basis on things that are in the schedule, things that are missing from the schedule, that we would be taking any time that would be adversely hurting either yourself or Jen or anyone else in the staff. I think we could be a positive influence and contribution in that regard. Just a lot of things don't get discussed because there's no form to discuss them. Even, for example, the Amendment 3 that came in for the Corolla contract, certainly there's no way for the CFAC to take a look at that to provide some comments to perhaps help in how the deliverables could be modified to make the contract, where Joe added several good deliverables in the contract, but he could use the assistance, I would think. So this subcommittee could be a very positive, but free, and could give some very positive assistance. As opposed to being part of the CFAC, comments that we make are all in writing. We were discussed in this short meeting, and we get answers that are in writing. We don't have time to cover all the answers and get things resolved. You know, so I think it would be very beneficial. But
yeah, here what you're saying, and I just answering the question, that will this will be an additional burden on staff time. I mean, that's just what it will be. I know this because I've experienced it, and when people have questions and lots of questions upon questions, that there's more time spent answering those questions, and it's outside the purview of the CFAC full committee, and then those questions have to be addressed at that time too, and so it just creates another layer of work. Not saying that could be useful. I'm not saying it's not. I'm just saying that it will create extra work, and that's what the question was asked.
John, can I make some comments?
Certainly.
Okay, so first off, I'm sorry if I implied that the questions were meaningless. I think the questions that were submitted by my colleagues and members were excellent questions, very detailed. I think they're too detailed for what I view philosophically and based on my 10 years in doing CFAC in conflict somewhat with our role. And the reason I say that is I also come from a background of financial accuracy in reporting, as I believe everybody in this committee does, or you wouldn't serve on it. But I also come from a background of cost effectiveness and the cost of generating the reporting and the questions and the education, et cetera, that's required for us to be helpful at that level of detail. And I think that's a management issue. You have to prioritize what you can do. And there's an ROI on this. And in my background, or actually with the city, with the finance committee, we've gone from 1 to 2 meetings a year to 12 meetings, and then now 7 meetings. And we changed our role, expanded our role, for those of you that might not recall, in 2014-2015 to go beyond the oversight of Measure Q and to see how that would work out. And we've gone the whole gamut. But I also say this, we do have to nail down what the role is, and that's directed by council. But in the course of serving on the committee and talking to people as they came and left the CFAC, what several of the ones, the one comment I heard more often than not, when somebody was leaving or not even applying again, was that this isn't what I signed up for. This is too much detail. I don't want to work for the city. You know, I want to kind of give them a citizen's perspective. I want to make sure they're spending the Measure Q money appropriately. We want to do it at a little higher level. So that's where I'm coming from on that. We just have to decide our priorities. And as Mr. Collins mentioned, we also have a subcommittee for the WRF of the council members. And comparing it to the CAFR, the CAFR is where the city staff explicitly asked us to help them because we had some members that actually had experience in doing CAFRs. And that was a less than a 1 month assignment, very detailed, specific, come and go. And it was an award that the city was trying to apply for. So in that case, it was justified. So I'm not against a subcommittee. I'm against a 3-4 year subcommittee that I think is going to require a tremendous drain on city resources, staffs, et cetera. We have hired professional consultants, contractors to do this job. And if they're not doing it, then we need to change our expectations with them or find somebody else to do it. In the same way, several of us have served on city council meetings, council advisory groups, looking for city staff directors. And they've done nationwide searches. I'm convinced that the people we have right now know what they're doing. They came highly recommended by a whole variety of different people, citizens, staff, other city managers, et cetera. And I think we need to trust their judgment in their reporting and not put comments in like, I think you lied on this report. That's unprofessional. It's inappropriate. That's just my opinion. Thank you.
Thank you, Barbara. Any other input on this item?
Well, I would just say that if a subcommittee is not.
Bill, you're muted.
Okay. You probably want me to be muted anyway from what I'm going to say. The program is behind schedule, well over cost. You haven't even just started to break ground. You already have had over $8 million in PCOs, many more to come. I think you need, from the beginning, I started to talk with Scott and us, had conversations fairly frequently. COVID has stopped that. We had a meeting about schedule that really upset Scott when I looked at the program management schedule, as did Bart, and we saw it was not being used. Understand in this bunch of comments, in the last quarter's comments, there is a program management information system that we've never been privy to, but I'm told that's where everything is. You know, a subcommittee could look at that and be able to provide help. One thing that program definitely needs is a cost reduction program. Understand now, just little things, conveyance facility, they're going to hire another. Steve is on the phone. I don't see you're not televised anymore, Eric. I think Steve is with you. You know, he's doing a great job following what Filek is doing. Why not use the same person to do both jobs? I think you'd need a very active, any program I've ever been in, the very get-go, you need to start working cost reduction. If you don't think you're over running in this program, you clearly don't have good visibility on what's going on because you are overrunning. So if there's no subcommittee, I'm going to spin my wheels. I'm spending far, far too much time, and it is very difficult because I don't talk directly to Eric anymore. I don't talk to Scott anymore. Joe is stuck just talking to me, and he's doing a great job, and really appreciate the information he provides us, and hopefully we're providing a value there. And if you think we're not providing a value, tell us. And if no subcommittee, my resignation is the end of this meeting. I just don't want any part of a group that, if the city thinks they really don't need any independent outside advice, fine. And if they think this report is really good, it's a great report. If your objective is to show as many green bullets as possible, so everything looks like it's okay. It's not okay. It's doing well. Corolla is a very capable company. Felix is a very good company. I assume they'll choose a very good company for conveyance facilities as well. But you could use some outside assistance with people who have been involved in this business, managing programs for many, many years, as Bart and I have. And I think we've been trying as best we can to provide assistance. But it's very difficult when you can't talk to people because we're not a subcommittee. So that's the end of my comments. Thank you, John.
Thank you, Bill. Homer, we haven't heard from you on this yet. Do you have any input on this?
No, I've been sitting here quietly on purpose. I'm not sure I want to get into this. My only suggestion would be, since our liaison, I know, has been listening to this, and the city manager has obviously listened to it, why don't you suggest that the two of them write something up and pass it up to the city council? Let those five people who currently get paid big bucks to make these kind of decisions. And if they think it would be valuable, great. If they don't think it has any merit, that's fine too. That's called passing the buck.
Well, okay, thank you.
I'll resign before that. Clearly, when they approve Marlis's minutes, which she motion when she incorrectly stated our motion was to modify the schedule of the contract, the report. I did not say that was not the motion; it was to modify. And additional milestones on the schedule. So I don't think the city council has the time to understand the difficulty in running this program. And they have utmost confidence in Corolla that the program continues to slide in schedule, continues to grow in cost, and there's probably not a very good estimate of what the real cost should be. So I wouldn't agree that that's a good way to go, and I wouldn't support it. I'd resign anyway.
So, Bill, you mentioned the amendment to the Corolla contract. Are you concerned that the Corolla contract itself is not being properly managed?
Absolutely. Absolutely. It's a not to exceed, it's a time and materials contract. The only incentive is to spend more time, spend more money. You know, the comment that was made in the beginning, you know, the not to exceed contract that Felek has with Black and Beach, Felek Overland have, it's a not to exceed. It's not a firm fixed price contract. So PCOs are expected in those kind of contracts. In a time materials contract, they do have some deliverables now. They even measure performance. which measuring schedule and cost performance in a time material contract is not often done. It's kind of a waste. Most people, probably even on this committee, have no experience running contracts where you use earned value metrics. So I think the contract could, Bart and I met with Scott and Jen back many months ago for Amendment 2 to try to find some ways to put some controls in, and they were not able to find one that they were to be satisfied with, to put some kind of cap and not to exceed price on it, something that incentivizes Corolla to control their prices. They, at least in this last report, the price went from 9.8, or their estimate of complete 9.8, to 10.01. So it's a small increase in their expected price or cost, but it's going to grow. Obviously, the schedule has slid out a lot as well. So long answer, but no, I don't think they have they're doing a good job managing what they have, but it's a contract. It's the wrong kind of contract, where they don't have the right kind of incentives. They don't have any incentives other than spend time and make money.
I think that line of questioning might deter people for what we're talking about here. We may have opinions on that. That's not what we're talking about with the subcommittee. The subcommittee is to looking at the reporting information that's being provided and to try to make sure that that's optimized. I have 41 years. This is what I did with project controls. So I'm not trying to get into how somebody ought to manage something. It's more, or do the control information, do the documents we have, aren't they providing good information? I mentioned, you know, for example, land acquisition went from 450,000 now up to 1.5 million. And we really don't know what that is. Now, I'm not arguing that we're going to say that it should or shouldn't be that, but I believe that there ought to be transparency in knowing what that is. And typically, again, when you go from one budget to a next budget, you explain the differences. I'm not saying you explain, you know, I'm not even saying $100,000 differences, but I think $1 million, $500,000 differences should be there. We should understand what those are. And then people can do with it what they want to say that's good or bad or indifferent. But I'm not personally trying to get in to say whether something's being managed properly or not. I don't think that's part of what the scope of the subcommittee is. That's a different issue.
Okay, thank you. I wanted to clarify that, because if a subcommittee were formed, it would be strictly advisory to the CFAC. And it would not be advisory to staff or to any of staff's agents or contractors. And it wouldn't be to direct anyone. So I just want to make sure that that's understood. It would only be to compile information and present that information to the CFAC. Do you have any other understanding, Bill, than that?
Well, I certainly do. I thought with the CAFRA, which I wasn't involved with, but I thought you and Lois worked closely with Jennifer in putting the CAFRA together. So the CFAC had very little role other than say, looks good. And I think that's the same thing a subcommittee of the WRF would do, is work with Joe in this case and or Eric occasionally when Eric comes to town, and just providing advice to them and helping and put the reports together when they put a quarterly report together. So that's indirectly helping the CFAC, but I think it's helping Eric and Joe in a positive way without causing any big adverse impact on time. They want to ask Scott if he believes that's possible, or Joe if he believes that's possible, or Eric. You know, if they disagree, they should probably disagree with me.
Yeah, I think, you know, the question is, what's the scope of the CFAC subcommittee for you to vote on? And if it's to review the reports and provide more feedback, you know, that could be one. If it's to provide general support on the project, that's a completely different other animal altogether. Both would absorb staff time, no doubt. But those are two different things entirely. So I think really it's what the CFAC thinks, if a subcommittee is necessary and why, would define the purpose. But again, I will just reiterate that we are significantly overburdened as it is with staff having to scramble to keep up with things, and another subcommittee would be a big drain on time. Not saying that's not a, wouldn't be a good outcome or bad outcome. I'm just saying it will be that for sure.
Thank you, Scott.
Oh, John, sorry, Tina, question. Time. If a subcommittee is agreed to, and granted, obviously, there would be some staff time taken away, but in reality, we took a hell of a lot of staff time away with all of our questions. It's my thought that if I have a question on a quarterly or a report, then I'm going to send it to the subcommittee, not to the staff, and that the subcommittee better hone those questions and bounce me out of the court, and if it needs to go to staff, they take it to staff. In other words, I would expect that I am delegating to the subcommittee and equally relinquishing some of my need to bother staff. And granted, I'm the new guy and learning things from the ground up, so half the time I don't ask because I think they're a waste of time at this time. And I also know there's two bulldogs paying attention. So really, I feel this question about time needs to be addressed in the scope of the subcommittee. They need to absolutely not take up more staff time, and we need to be in agreement that we're not going to either as a result of their presence, and that we're going to take it to them, not to you or to Jen. I mean, is that not really the role of the subcommittee? I mean, we're essentially relinquishing, we're delegating. So that's two people, not seven. Am I wrong about that?
No, I think that's the concept that I would see, that it would be to help the CFAC to actually do the work.
Yeah, yeah. But, and also to help not run our questions directly to Jen Friday, Saturday, you know what I mean? And send them to Bill and Bart, if that's the case, I mean.
I think that makes a lot of sense, and a lot of the questions you know before the report comes out because we haven't made changes, and those same questions come up each time because the way the report is put together now, things could be put in one table as opposed to another table, and it would be a lot more understandable, for example.
Yeah, and I would expect that Eric's presentation to us would go even faster than it did today, and all of this discussion with questions, because frankly, they would have already been said, done, and answered, and the report we're looking at would already include them.
Really easily, that could get tripped up with the Brown Act.
Okay, okay.
I'm completely confused. It appears to me that Bill and Bart have completely different objectives. Bill, I respect you a great deal, but I just think it's totally inappropriate for the city to hire, basically, granted the price would be right, but to hire another consultant, which is what I think you're driving at. You want to become part of the team that manages the project. Yeah. Bart, I think, wants to have a subcommittee to review the report, try to condense it a little bit, so that Bart would write a Bart, Bill, or whoever is on the subcommittee might write a one or two page summary of the kind of questions that we got at this last meeting, which were a lot of duplications, and you're right, it was 6 hours of Eric's time, but as far as I'm concerned, could have been a lot better off doing something else. Anyway, that's just my feeling on it, and I'm absolutely opposed to having another management team involved. And I'm interested to hear more about from the other members of the committee about a subcommittee. But at the moment, I'm pretty cold on the whole idea.
Thank you, Homer.
May I?
Go ahead, Tina. Yes, go ahead.
Okay. I want to express acknowledgement of the great experience that both Bill and Bart bring. I feel that perhaps this committee might be the wrong avenue to participate at the level that's being offered. Not sure about that, but that's kind of what I think, based on what I'm hearing. And the other thing is that the proposal as drafted doesn't put enough clarity around what the specific objectives would be and the amount of resources required. And so for those reasons, without better, I think very strict clarification, I would not be able to support the proposal as currently presented for those reasons.
Thank you, Lois. So, Bill, you've provided the committee with a written proposal. Do you want to make a motion that the committee accept this and form the subcommittee as written?
Yeah, I'll move that the committee accept the creation of a WRF subcommittee under the guidelines that were outlined in that paper. And certainly the CFAC can terminate the subcommittee at any time. And certainly if the city staff believes that we're consuming too much time, they can certainly ask that the subcommittee be terminated, and that could happen very easily.
Is there a second?
I'll second it, and a comment. An alternative, an option would be to allow one meeting to take place to vet how this might work. But that can go after we vote on this.
Okay. Any other comments before we take the vote?
Sorry, I need clarification. Bart, I got confused. As written is what's on the table for a motion, but are you suggesting that a follow-up meeting would be required to tighten that which is written?
That's not what I said, but I think that's a good idea. That's what could happen.
Okay.
Is there could be a follow-up one meeting to see if we can get along, to see how this would work.
Right.
And Scott, clearly his opinion is that this would be a burden and would not provide benefit, or, you know, per Barbara's ROI depiction,
right,
it would not be a return on the investment. But an alternative would be form the subcommittee. We'd meet once, and if that proves to be burdensome, it literally could be canceled after the first one.
Okay.
My second was per the motion.
Right. Bill, are you in agreement with an approach like Bart just made?
If I could just modify my motion, then we accept the creation of a subcommittee as written in the paper and modify the last paragraph says the subcommittee will operate up until the next CFAC meeting when we discuss the quarterly report and make a determination whether it continues beyond it.
Who's involved in this first meeting?
Whoever's on the
subcommittee. Well, yeah, we haven't gotten there yet. First, we have to see if the committee gets formed.
No, I'm not talking about...
gets approved.
I'm not talking about the finance committee involvement. I'm talking about who's involved on the staff time.
So...
Who does Bart and Bill envision attending this first meeting?
We don't envision anyone attending a meeting. I don't understand. We're going to talk to people. The person we would work with is the manager of the WRF for the city, which is Joe Mueller.
It would also include the finance director, myself, Rob Leivick, and Eric Caceres, if we want to have a robust discussion. So it'd be all of us.
I can't imagine needing to ask Jennifer about anything or Rob Leivick. Perhaps you at some point, Scott.
Based on interactions, the good questions that you raise, they span more than just Joe Mueller. They span more than just me or more than just Eric Caceres. And I guess that's the point I was trying to make earlier. And this is who participates in the discussions with our WARP subcommittee that already exists.
That could be. When I met with Jennifer, I don't know, 2 or 3 months, oh, before coronavirus, I guess, because I assumed that she was involved with the preparation of the report, and she had no involvement at all. So I guess I don't understand that involvement, but if we still go to one meeting, to me it would be Joe and Eric as to who we would meet with. I would love to see the liaisons from City Council be part of that discussion so they could also see whether or not there's any value to what that discussion would bring out. But my understanding is that Joe's now in charge of this, and Eric is obviously the program manager. And I think the two of them somewhat report to you, Scott, independently. So that's who I would see. Now, if Jen or you would want to participate, you might want to, or Jen might want to as well. I mean, I'm not saying somebody couldn't, but that is not who I would have envisioned. It would have been Joe and Eric, Bill and I, and whoever else might be on the committee, which would be one more possible.
Okay, so Bill modified his motion. Bart, do you second that modification?
Yes.
Okay, so we have a motion and a second. Let's call for the question. All those in favor? All those in favor?
So you're asking us to answer right now. All those in favor, yeah, of a subcommittee formed for the purpose of one meeting between now and the next CFAC meeting is the motion. Right. Yeah. I support that. I support that.
Aye.
Okay, all those opposed?
Aye.
Yeah, no.
Aye.
Palmer?
No.
No, I'm going to vote no also. Okay, so the motion fails. We can move on to the next item.
I have a lot in my life going on, and I hereby resign from this committee. Obviously, there's no need for professional advice from someone with my limited background. And so good luck, and it's been an interesting time. I've devoted an awful lot of time, and I thought it was helpful to some people. If not, yeah, that's fine. And it's been enjoyable. I certainly enjoyed working with this group, and I'm going to miss the opportunity to continue to work with you. Thank you very much, and I'm over and out. So,
thank you, Bill.
Find out how to leave. Okay, there it is.
Jennifer, so we have the item B3, review of the fiscal year 1920 third quarter investment report. Are you still with us, Jennifer?
I am still here. So this is the third quarter investment report. You get this, in theory, every quarter, a little bit delayed, and you'll be getting the fourth quarter report in October. You can see we have a pretty substantial cash balance in terms of liquid assets. LAIF is pretty liquid, as are our money market sweep and OPIS account. We are watching our balances pretty closely in trying to, you know, time the receipt of the reimbursements from WIFIA and keep as much cash in our higher interest earning accounts, LAIF and OPIS. So we are about 93% liquid right now. As soon as we get a better understanding of the SRF process, I think we can adjust maybe our strategy on this a little bit or have a conversation about that. But I'm still remain pretty cognizant of the cash flow and also the fact that interest rates on CDs are not that high right now. So with LAIF being just under 2% when I checked the other day, to not tie up money for, you know, 5 years, I think is probably a conservative approach, but worth it in my mind. And so we make determination as to maybe some other options with the cash or how we're going to fund the project going forward if we're going to use cash, and that cannot be a future discussion item once we have those final pieces in place.
Okay, thank you. Any questions for Jennifer? Just feel free to jump in, please.
I've got a suggestion. Considering the amount of money that's going to be moving in and out for the next 24, 30 months, what about putting on the report a memo accounts receivable?
I can do that.
Make you look better.
Yeah, I can. If the committee would like to do that, I'm happy to do that.
Well, you'd almost have to put accounts payable as well, because you're going to have money going out and in huge amounts. I would wonder if that would really be useful. I mean, it is an investment report. It's based on cash. And Jennifer, doesn't it statutorily have to follow a certain format? I mean, there's statutes that say you don't have to do this anymore, but if you do, you have to provide X, Y, and Z information.
Yes, there are. I think if you wanted a summary on receivables, maybe similar to what was in the quarterly report, the staff report part, it could add that in the staff report to the investment report. Just to get a sense of what we expect coming in from the quarter.
Well, John, I mean, like what she said earlier in the meeting was she's anticipating getting $5.5 million from the SRF planning loan soon, and she's expecting to get $3.5 million from WIFIA at the end of the week. You know, that's $8 million. That's a third of the current cash. And I'm just saying a memo, footnote, something, just to let people know that there's more money moving around than it would appear or something. I don't know.
Okay, I would agree. If you can do that in your staff report, that wouldn't violate your requirements. It might be useful information.
I think we could figure out probably a chart similar to what was in the quarterly report, staff report, just an update. And maybe that's something we can work on getting on either the WRF website or our city website and keep it updated so you can see the cash flow coming in.
And Jennifer, I have a question about the Opus Bank.
Mm-hmm.
It looks like it's 19 basis points higher than the Lithia. So is there any reason to not use that at a higher level?
LAIF is easier for us to transfer out of if we needed to do a transfer. They don't charge, Opus charges a fee for transferring. LAIF is, LAIF provides so many, I think, without a fee. We did the research on this a while ago and I'm kind of drawing a blank on it, but LAIF is, very secure. It's, you know, the most common, investment tool for municipalities. But also is very flexible if we need to do a transfer. So, for example, last week we expected the WIFIA money to come in because we hadn't heard yet that they didn't receive it, and we had to call and do a transfer to cover some of our AP batches that went out and weren't deposited yet because we didn't have enough in our sweep account. Because we've been trying to keep those pretty low, and as long as we get that call into LAIF by 2 o'clock, it's in there the next morning. We could try to allocate the balance out. I don't necessarily think we need to worry about having to transfer $17 million in one day. So we could try to make that a more even distribution between the two.
And is it a flat rate or is it a percentage for the fee?
I believe it's a flat rate, but I'd have to go back and revisit that. I can't remember off the top of my head.
And let's see. So your sweep... the mechanics doesn't offer something comparable to the Opus rate. Yeah.
No.
That's too bad.
Yeah. And Lois, it might have been before you were on the committee. We used to have a much larger balance in our money market and sweep accounts. But because of the low interest rate, you know, the committee was pointing out, rightfully so, that we really needed to control that better and make sure we didn't keep significant balances in there, and we made sure they were in higher earnings.
You may want to even sweep more in, from mechanics to lay for Opus if you can.
Yeah, our protocol's been, or our threshold has been about $2 million. And we've used that as a target once it gets below that to really make an assessment, to look at what our AP batches are that are out there, what's uncashed, and when payroll's coming, just so we don't get into a emergency call that we need to transfer some money.
Okay, so Jennifer, congratulations. You're looking like a genius for buying all those CDs back in 2019 now.
Yeah.
Around 3%. That looks pretty darn good now.
Huh? 3% does look pretty good. Happy we locked those in when we did.
Yeah, and the LAFE rate is declining pretty quickly now, I noticed. So, yeah, that's good. You're probably next report, you're going to be exceeding the LAFE rate. Yay!
Yay!
Okay, so is everybody okay with this report? No, no objections? And we'll consider it received and filed. So next item, Jennifer, future agenda items.
So you will have another quarterly investment report. In fact, you may have two. You might not have first quarter of 2020-21. You'll have a quarterly WARF report. This is October that we'll be meeting again. We will not have completed first quarter budget review, but we do intend to do a review in August. To provide to council. I'm not sure if it'll go at the end of August or early September. So we will bring forward a discussion of at least the status update, where we are with our revenues, where we are with our expenditures, if there's any additional information we know about COVID, impacts of COVID, that kind of thing, just because we are monitoring our budget pretty closely under the current circumstances. And we will, in October, be starting our final stages of our audits. So we won't have we'll have an update on that, but we won't have anything on the calendar at that point.
And how about the budget brief? Are you going to be doing something on that?
Yeah, so I had intended to include the budget brief in this meeting. And as I was looking at it, and in light of the council putting the ballot measure on, I thought maybe we could update it a little bit and refresh it, make it a little more current. So it may be more informative maybe for people wanting to understand our financial situation. So I will work on that. I think I can send out kind of a version of that to the committee, and maybe if you individually respond to me, we won't have any Brown Act issues. If you have some thoughts on that. Understanding we won't be able to engage in a conversation, but I can work on a draft and just try to have something be a little bit more current and relevant given what the community is going to be asked to vote on and understanding what they're voting on.
Okay. Thank you. Any comments by anybody on that? Okay. So the next meeting will be on Tuesday, October 20th, 2020. 3 p.m., and I guess we're going to be doing it the same way via Zoom.
Unless there's some change between now and then.
Unless there's a miracle. Well, thank you, everybody. If you have any last-minute comments, Tina, you have a comment?
Nope, I'm just getting ready to adjourn.
Oh, okay, all right. Then we are adjourned.
Yeah,
thank you, everybody.
Bye.
Bye.